Last week, Nancy did a wonderful job of leading you through the first part of this chapter 2 of Philippians. I bet for a lot of you, the words "me too" will never have the same meaning again. And she ended up with the final portion of that particular section, which is a hymn, which is a song. It's a beautiful song about how Jesus did not see equality with God as a thing to be held on to, but emptied himself, taking the form of a slave. The word is slave. But then God lifting Jesus up, and in the final lines it says that every knee shall bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. That's everyone on the earth, under the earth. Now, to us, it sounds like a beautiful hymn, and it is. But those last two lines turn it into something else. You see, Philippi was primarily a Roman settlement. Most of the people there were Roman citizens. Most of the people there were Gentiles. Paul had helped to start this congregation, was very proud that they were continuing to do what he had taught them to do. But when they heard every knee shall bow, the emperor's knee as well? I don't think so. Every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord? No, Caesar is Lord. And after a few years, that would become the determining factor in whether Christians lived or died. Were they willing to say that Caesar was Lord? Or were they going to hold with the confession that Jesus is Lord? So all of a sudden, this beautiful little hymn becomes a revolutionary document. To say that the emperor's knee would bow to Jesus and that the emperor would confess that Jesus is Lord is the equivalent of sedition. So, was Paul starting a revolutionary movement? No. He doesn't call people to overthrow the government. He doesn't call people to take violent action of any kind. How does he expect this change to take place? Well, first of all, God's initiating it. But the crazy thing is, he says to the Philippians, just keep doing what you're doing. You're doing the right thing. You're showing the light of the love of Christ to all you meet, and you don't argue, and you're not contentious. You don't put others down. You consider others more highly than yourself. Just keep doing what you're doing. Work out your salvation in fear and trembling is the traditional translation. But what we miss there is that it's not just up to us to work out. God is at work in and through us working this out, and we're partners. We are working with God. Eugene Peterson, who a number of years ago did a paraphrase, although the paraphrase was based on the original languages, of the entire Bible called The Message, I think gets it right. He says, what I'm getting at, friends, is that you should simply keep on doing what you've done from the beginning. When I was living among you, you lived in responsible obedience. Now that I'm separated from you, keep it up. Better yet, redouble your efforts. Be energetic in your life of salvation, reverent and sensitive before God. That energy is God's energy, an energy deep within you. God willing and working at what will give God the most pleasure. So this revolution is going to take place because God is working through the simple everyday events of the lives of the Philippians as they attempt to imitate Christ, to empty themselves, to take the form of a servant. The interesting thing to me is that Paul could not imagine that we would be sitting here 20 centuries later talking about this text. He was expecting this to happen at any moment, before the day was out. At any time, God would be at work in and through these communities and bring history to a culmination. Well, here we are 20 centuries later. We're still talking about these texts, and we are still being encouraged to do exactly the same thing. For our congregation, we say to be the loving light of Christ, connecting others to each other and to God so that God can transform all of our lives and our communities. That's how we describe it in our language. But it's essentially what Paul was telling the Philippians. It's interesting that this quiet, peaceful, totally nonviolent approach to transforming the world was Paul's primary approach. He didn't set up a group of terrorists. He didn't set up an army of any kind. He simply said, if you do what you're supposed to do over the years, God will work in and through you. You know, occasionally, and it seems to happen especially around Lent and Easter, a book will be published or an archaeological find will be discovered, and it will kind of create conversation among Christians. I remember as early as the 1960s, a book called The Passover Plot. How many of you remember The Passover Plot? I see a few hands. Yeah. A few years later, it was The Da Vinci Code. I bet more of you would raise your hands for The Da Vinci Code, wouldn't you? And people get very exercised over this. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? These people are being led astray. And when folks come to me and ask me that, I say, we're just going to keep doing what we always do. We're going to keep telling the same story we tell year in and year out of God at work through a human being, through Jesus Christ, in order to transform our lives and our communities. That's what we're going to do, because these sensational books and discoveries come and go. Do you see how a few hands went up for the Passover plot? One of these days, the same will be true for the Da Vinci Code. The same will be true for all these other publications that we get so excited about. And you know what? We'll continue to tell the story. We will continue to attempt in our own frail and limited way to live out the love of God and the light of God. I love the image that Paul chooses. He says, you are stars in this world, which is broken, which is hurting, which for many people is very dark and it's hard, like the night, to find their way around. But you are stars. Now, in our time, stars, the word stars, tends to get connected with movie stars, right? Tends to get connected with football stars and other sports stars. These are not always the best role models and examples, are they? He's talking about our imagining the literal stars shining in the night. He said, in this world, you all will be the points of light that people see, by which they can navigate their way toward God, or back to God if they have lost their way. Barbara Brown Taylor, I mentioned this book a couple of weeks ago, has a new book called Finding Your Way In, is that right? Learning to Walk in the Dark, that's what it's called. It's a good thing I have it with me. And she has a wonderful description here that I want to share with you. All light is late, wrote the poet Lee Young Lee, reminding me how long it takes for starlight to reach my eyes. When I watch a star fall, I'm watching a funeral that took place a long, long time ago. Stars are light years away. Galaxies are millions of times that far away. Chet Ramo, who is to astronomy what Lee Young Lee is to poetry, tells me that if I could find quasar 3C273, that may mean something to you all. It means little to me, but it's a star. In my backyard telescope, I would be looking at a point of light that started heading my way more than 1.5 billion years ago. Isn't it remarkable that stars whose physical presence have been extinguished continue to give light? we continue to receive their light. You know, over the next few weeks, you're going to be hearing a lot about the Legacy Campaign. And in the Legacy Campaign, we're going to be talking about the history of this church and the people who have been stars, who have been points of light shining. And some of those people are no longer with us physically, but like those stars, their light still comes to us. Their light still informs us and helps to lead and guide us. And you're going to be encouraged to take part in this campaign, which is about raising money, but it's much, much more than about that. It's about learning how we too can be those stars, those shining points of life for those in the future, so that they might find their way to God as well. Seems to me that sometimes that light comes from people who put words together in a certain way on a page. For others, it's a voice on a recording of some sort, and we hear that voice, and it brings that person back to us, even though they may be long gone from this earth. Or a video recording. We have some video recordings, and some of the folks who are recorded there, I have assisted in their services of death and resurrection, and yet their light still shines. This building as a gift, this place where we gather to learn what it is we're called to do in order to share the loving light of Christ, that too is a star that comes to us, that we inherit. And so we're called also to be those stars offering light to future generations. The folks who have gone to ODIM come back and tell me about what they've experienced. The people who are stars to them, points of light to them, but also they have become stars to the people they have come to know down there. This morning in the Tennessean, I just happened to glance at the front page, and it stopped me so that I read the article on the front page. I was actually intending to end this sermon a little differently, but the Tennessean convinced me to do otherwise, as interesting as that may be. On the front page is a story about Pulaski, Tennessee. If I say Pulaski, Tennessee, I will guarantee you most of you will know at least one thing, and that is it's the birthplace of the Ku Klux Klan. Pulaski has been trying to live that down for a long, long, long time. And this article is about one of those stars, one of those points of light. It's called Martin Methodist College. It is our conference college. We support it through our gifts to apportionments. And they have taken a lead with others in the community in order to change the perception of Pulaski from a place that's associated with hate and exclusion to a place that is associated with the loving light that draws people closer together because it draws them closer to God. Art professor there, Bernice Davidson, has done a series of murals on the unsung heroes of that community, the stories that people would not know unless she helped to save them through her visual representations. Ted Brown, president there, done a wonderful job over the years when he was coming to Martin Methodist, and his friends heard that it was in Pulaski, Tennessee, and they knew that one thing about Pulaski. They asked him, why do you want to go and be president of a college in the very backyard of racism? What better place for there to be a star? What better place for there to be a guiding light of some kind? And so we are all called to be those lights. We come to God by the light of those who've gone before us, those who are still with us, and those whose lives may have been extinguished, but their light continues. And so we are called to be that same light for others. Paul believed that the people in Philippi could do that, were doing that. I believe that the people at West End can do that. We are doing that. Not perfectly. They didn't do it perfectly. We won't do it perfectly. But we can do it well. And with God's help, we will. Thanks be to God.